OMG has announced that the brand will soon return to manufacturing in Europe. Unfortunately, not England this time, but at a brand new facility in northwestern Spain. The initials MG used to, of course, stand for Morris Garages, but now will stand for Made in Galicia. Probably.
Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth, he's Alex.
Hello.
And he's no one else, it's just me and Alex for the conversation today. Zog's having a very intense week. He's in Las Vegas in a poker tournament, I believe.
Fancy.
He likes to do that. So he's not available for the chat. And I've had a bit of a busy week in and out of hospital. Not me, my brother, my fantastic brother. Please wish John Bryn Jones on Speed, people. Give him loads of strength, right? Give us all your best wishes. He's in a fairly precarious position in critical care as we speak. I've just come away from him. He's okay. He's doing okay. But he needs a bit of love, right. And the love, we love, I'm not going to build a link from love to cars, right? I almost did there.
Well, actually, Gareth, you can.
Go on.
But we just need to swap around what we were going to talk to. Speaking of love, there is, of course, the news that the Ferrari Luce has been designed by Love Form, Johnny Ives' agency.
Very good. Yeah, we've got two cars to talk about in this programme. We were going to save the big one, you might say, for the second half of the show and talk about the other one first, but no. Let's talk about the effluent in the room.
I mean,
we better set it up. We're talking about Luce.
Yeah, we were talking about the Ferrari Luce.
Right, this is the controversial Ferrari EV. I thought it was going to be called the Electrica. Was that just the code name for it?
I think it was the code name or something. But the strange thing about it is that, sorry, I'm a bit croaky. My week has not been like yours, but just, yeah, my voice has decided it's going to maybe just take a small absence. Yeah, the thing about the Luce is when it first sort of broke cover, I was like, ugh, that's horrible. That's the worst thing ever. Because it doesn't look like a Ferrari. Mm. It's big, it's heavy, it's got five seats. But the specs are still exactly what you want them to be. It's 0-62 in 2.5 seconds. It'll do some miles an hour, 192. The battery is 122 kilowatt hours, which with the range attached to it, 330, that's what, 2.7-ish miles per kilowatt hour, which isn't hugely efficient.
It isn't, is it?
No.
We aim for like 4.1 with some cars these days.
If a car does 3,
yeah,
I'm happy. Mm. Because that's about right for a normal person.
Normal driving.
More than that is brilliant. Less than that, you start going, ooh, you need a big battery for it. But then if you have a bigger battery, you have more weight, which means less efficiency. And so it scales up in strange ways. But yeah, the internet didn't really like it that much. I had some friends who were at the unveil in Italy. They were saying that it won't look very good on Instagram. There are some bits of it that won't necessarily track as well as some others. And that's not going to go down brilliantly well. Now, the really strange thing about it is that as the week's gone on, it's grown on me quite dramatically.
Did your opinion of it change when you saw it in red as opposed to blue?
No, this is the thing. Like, I'm staring at pictures of it now. Like, the red car, it looks all right. But the blue car, there's one of the press shots, the front three quarter, and it just has stayed in my brain, and I really like it. Yes, it's different. It's very different from any other Ferrari. But at the same time, that's probably a good thing. If it looked like it was a pastiche of a 458 or a 296 or whatever, or even a Pura Sangue with some sort of closed-off vents on it, it would look like an attempt at a Ferrari, or that they'd had a go and hadn't really kind of figured it out. Because of what Love Form and Johnny Ive and Mark Newsom have done, like Johnny Ive and Mark Newsom, two incredibly good designers, because they're not necessarily known for designing cars, they've managed to go in and give it a completely separate look. And the thing that I keep thinking about, I was years ago, it was something that Ian Callum said, with the EVs will give car designers and car design itself an opportunity to change quite dramatically.
Yeah, yeah.
Give it an opportunity to, ooh, some horns. The joys of living on
someone
a main
supporting
road.
Ian Callum driving past there.
Yeah. Yeah. But it will give car designers an opportunity to design new things differently, yeah, and to play with the form, because you don't need to have an engine somewhere. You don't need to have fuel tanks here and there. And it's not the first car to have done it, but it's one of the first cars to do it quite dramatically, to play with those forms and play with what can be done. Obviously, you still need to have a passenger cell, and you still need to have a boot, and you need to have somewhere to plug it in. But because they've gone so different, I really appreciate it. And I like the fact that the front of it is a spoiler for aero. Other EVs have done that. If you look at Lotus Eletre, for example, or the Lotus Evija, those sort of, that boomerang thing, air flows under that and over the car. So there's less of sort of a slab.
Porous.
Porous, yes. Porosity is what they called it. Yeah. I think that was a Russell Carr thing. Yes, we need to think about porosity. I mean, the Evija has two massive holes in it,
yeah,
for airflow as well. But the way that they've done this, you know, there's one angle, I'm just looking at his press shot right now, there's one angle where it's really obvious that if you didn't have that, it would just like quite dramatically slope. But that extra sort of bridge, it makes it look kind of cool. And then you scroll through to other bits of it. The rear three-quarter, it still has Ferrari hallmarks in it. It still looks like it could have Ferrari bits there, other than even if you took the prancing horse off of it. But I like what they've done with it. It's really, really grown on me. But I also understand why people don't like it, because it doesn't look like the Ferrari you're used to. It's not this sort of safety blanket of, oh, it's okay, the Ferrari you like, it's still there, don't worry. And people also forget that if they don't like it, they don't have to buy it.
Yeah, like, I knew you were going to say that. I could hear, before we even discussing this, I knew you are likely to say, and if you don't say it, I'm going to say, yeah, it for you, that, and 99.999% of the people complaining about Luce, mm, will never buy it.
No. Oh, it's much like the Jag in that respect. The Type 00. I mean, there's been, the same week as Luce, the Mercedes did their new four-door AMG GT, which is an aggressively ugly piece of car design. It is terrible. Really, really don't like it. Yes, it's powerful. Yes, it'll burn rubber, but it's horrid to look at. It's really awful. But if you look at the Type 00, now the Type 01, and you think about its form and its shape, it's, you know, it looks nothing like a Jag. Nothing like a Jag that we've thought of before, but it does look quite serious and quite imperious. And the fallout from that is people going, oh, they've killed Jaguar. Oh. In that respect, you know, you can't buy a petrol Jag anymore. That's not going to be a thing anymore. But it looks quite good. And if you put the two side by side, you think, well, actually, Jag's looking quite nice now.
Yeah,
but then
yeah,
the more I've had time to think about the Luce and the more I've had time to look at it, I get it. I get why it's different. I get why they've done what they've done. It isn't a 250 GTO. But the thing is, nothing's been a 250 GTO since the 250 GTO.
Yeah.
It is going to be very expensive, like 600 grand or something ridiculous like that, which is a lot of money, but I guess it's being pitched as this flagship. What I'm curious to see, though, is where Ferrari goes next with it. Because there'll be a sort of a gentle upgrade of it at some point, obviously. But is this going to be the only Ferrari EV, or will it start a family of EVs using that design language and using that form and using the tech? Because it's full of mental technology that I can't even begin to get my head around.
Well, if you look at Luce, it's Ferrari's first ever five-door. They've built four-door cars. Sorry, five-seater, I mean.
Yeah,
they've built
so
four-seaters.
The Purosangue's got captain seats in the back, hasn't it? And that's, you know, that's, the Purosangue is quite an aggressive piece of design, but that at least still fits in with Ferrari's ethos. You know, they went a sort of familiar path with it. Whereas this, I think the statement it's made, because it's a different powertrain, which supercar fans will automatically dislike, because if you look at various bits of the internet, people just go, oh, it's the worst thing ever. Hate EVs. I'm never going to buy one. Good. Don't.
Yeah.
Buy whatever the hell you want. The used market is still there. You will still be able to buy a petrol car. Like, they're not going to take away all the petrol stations in 2030. That's not going to happen. Because it's so different, yeah, supercar fans won't like the fact it's electric. Oh, how dare they make an EV? EVs are bad. They're the worst thing ever. Fine, don't buy one.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That petrol isn't going to vanish.
Yeah.
That's all good. And then because the design is so drastically different, you think the Venn diagram of people that are going to buy it is very, very small, if at all. But at the same time, if you can write it off against your company of some description, then all of a sudden you have free family transport, or almost free family. Someone worked out how much tax the government would end up paying on these things, which is quite obscene. But as something just to get around in, something to take the kids to Alton Towers or whatever in, or wherever one goes when one has 600,000 to spare for a Ferrari EV, you know, it kind of makes sense because you can plug it in at home. You'll still have the Ferrari luxury. They say they've tried to build in some noises of it, so that there are noises when you're driving it. You hear whirs and clicks and things like that, and they've tried to make it as visceral as they can.
They've accentuated the noise of the motors or something, haven't they?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Yeah, so there are noises in there.
For me, I mean, I love a Ferrari. You know, I love all Ferraris, whether they're designed by Bertone or Pininfarina or anyone else. This is the first time I think I've ever looked at a Ferrari and thought, it looks like an appliance, not an emotive piece of engineering. I don't dislike it. I mean, you know, what I think about this car is academic. I'm not going to buy one, right?
Are you not?
No. Well, all right then, I've got the money.
All right then, go on, I'll take one in red.
But do you remember when we first had LCD displays on cars? I'm thinking actually of a Jaguar, of the XJ. Do you remember when the XJ had a digital display? Instead of having real bezels for the first time, it had a kind of what looked to me like a drawing in a graphic novel of a pair of car bezels. You know, it's largely convincing, but you can just tell it's not real somehow. And the impression that this car gives me, it's like a digital graphic version of a car, but with none of the real. It looks like it's made out of glass fibre, not steel.
Yeah, no, I see.
Yeah, and the graphic detail on the back, it's almost like paint this flat area to look like a Ferrari.
A 575.
It's more of a pastiche of a Ferrari than a lot of people realise, I would say. Overall, it's disappointing because you always want it to be the most beautiful car in the world, and that it is not. It's okay, right?
No.
It's just not the most striking, beautiful car in the world. But the thing that disappoints me most is the rear. I think if it was a shooting brake, you know what I mean? I'd love it.
Gareth Jones in Once Shooting Brake Shot.
That's what would do it for me. The fact that it's a kind of a five-door fastback coupe is what makes it look more like a family appliance rather than a racing car. And what you were saying about the potential of Ferrari turning this into a range, I can visualise a two-seat coupe version of this car.
Here's the thing about that. Like, it would be very nice. In an ideal world, it would be great, but no one's buying EV sports cars.
Mm, yeah, as Lotus.
Like, and if you look at, admittedly, you know, there hasn't really been one at this sort of price point.
Yeah.
But you know, Tesla Roadster was a nice thing when it was a thing, and there is allegedly a new one coming along, but that's never going to fucking happen, is it? And if it does, it'll be because Tesla's just posted some terrible numbers, and Elon Musk goes, right, come on, guys, we need to commit to this. It's only been 7 years.
I saw a really good comparison of the performance of Luce and the Roadster, the alleged Roadster, if it ever actually. Can you buy them? Do they exist?
You can give them lots of money for a deposit.
Right.
Hang on.
Yeah.
New Tesla Roadster. Let's have a look. When was it announced?
About 2017.
It's going to be £151,000.
Yeah. This is interesting. The headline, as I remember, is that the Roadster, in theory, outperforms in terms of acceleration, top speed and range of the Luce, and is about a third of the price, if not more, less than a third. Yeah.
Well, the Tesla, they say it'll be a bit quicker. I can't remember the top speed, but I do remember Musk said it was going to fly at some point.
He did say that.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
It was unveiled in 2017, so 9 years ago. So even if it comes out tomorrow, it's quite an old car. But the thing is, if you then look at the people who have tried EV hypercars, so Lotus, Rimac, Pininfarina, remember the Batista? I don't think I've ever seen one outside of Goodwood or seen mention of one.
Yeah.
People aren't buying them.
Yeah.
They just aren't. And I had a very off-the-record chat with someone at a company that makes and sells them. And the number that they said that were going to be sold and the number actually sold, wildly different. Wildly different. Whether or not that's true, whether they were a reliable source, they should be because of the jobs that they had. But still, because in that market, if we look at it sort of realistically, if you've got that sort of money, and this is like millions and millions and millions to spend on a car, if you've got that sort of money, you can afford what you want.
Yeah.
And you can say, right, well, I actually want something with a V12, so I'll go and buy something with a V12. That's even sort of trickled down to things like Ferrari SF90 and stuff like that, where people buy them and go, wow, this is the greatest thing ever, and then they can't sell them on the used market because people don't want a hybrid. They want a used, different V12 or V8 or whatever. So I think it's interesting that they've gone, right, first five-seat, first EV, they kind of tackle two things that puts Ferrari into a new space at once. I honestly think, though, with this, that it will mature quite nicely. Perhaps because the Jag, you know, that was nearly 2 years ago now. The Jag was, again, it was a surprise, it was a shock. But now it's bedded in, now it's sort of become the norm, especially if you see it up close and personal. It's a lot shorter than you think it is, and it's not as big as you think it is. But if you get near it, it works. And now it's sort of had time to absorb into the collective consciousness.
Humans don't like change. We struggle with change. For me, you know, being such a Ford fan for my entire life, I've been interested in cars. Generally, when a Ford comes out, I'm always slightly disappointed because it wasn't as great as I wanted it to be. And then a couple of years later, you go, oh, that Series 2 Mondeo was a handsome car in its day. Look at that. They build in design longevity. These are people who are professional designers who are supposed to understand how design works, not in a moment, but in a medium and long-term environment as well. This car, now forgive me, I don't know. The people who designed this car, they're something to do with Apple, or they used to design for Apple, is that right?
So Johnny Ive used to, he was Apple's designer.
Okay.
He is Mr. iPhone, he is, he is Apple, basically. So I'm trying to find a quote that would suit this very well. So years ago, I interviewed Domagoj Ukek, who was BMW's head of exterior. And he is the man who's sort of responsible for the quite wild thing. So I think I interviewed him at the LA Motor Show in 2019. I can't find the piece online for Love and Money. But he was basically saying that the reason we've kind of been quite dramatic is because when, like, earlier in his career, he'd go on a new 5 Series launch and journalists would say, oh, it looks the same. Oh, why does it look the same? Oh, why is this evolution, not revolution? Oh, this is so boring. And he goes, and now we make something completely different because people say it's boring and they hate it. So at least they want to try and move the game on a little bit. And especially, and this is very much personal opinion, but Ferrari's design the last few years hasn't been very good since the Pininfarina split.
I don't know. I think they're detailed and dramatic and
lines. To me, they look like, I mean, I'll never say, oh no, it's a Ferrari. But look at the new Testarossa, if you look at 296, they look like they would be a really good Hot Wheel.
Yeah.
But not necessarily something kind of big and dramatic and shiny. Oh, it's just me. Maybe I just really like the 458 and that era of Ferrari. Like, I even like the 612 Scaglietti. And definitely in the minority there. But
I like the 400i, and I'm the only man who's ever said that in blue.
Yeah, I mean, Mondial's still challenging, but very challenging.
It was, wasn't it?
But honestly, I think give it a couple of years, and I don't think people say, oh, I was wrong, I really like it now. But I think people will come out and say, actually, I've had a little bit of time to think about this, and I like this bit, and I like that bit. I want to see one up close and personal, which I hope to do at Goodwood.
I'm sure it has tremendous impression in the...
I think it'll be absolutely fascinating.
In the plastic.
and the interior of it, that was revealed in February, I think. You know, it looks very much like someone who has spent a lot of time around 60s Ferrari Berlinettas. Johnny Ive might have a few. But has updated it and made it modern and made it, you know, for our era. So it still has the nod to the classic. I mean, I'm fully prepared for people to find me and tell me I'm super wrong and I should never review a car ever again. But I'm just looking at a picture of the interior now. Like, yes, it's screens.
Yeah.
There are some buttony bits, but there are lots of screens. But it looks really nice.
Yeah, the interior is smashing, I think.
Yeah.
It's a bit slab-sided. It seems as if, you know, they've got the aspect
ratio. The man
ratio.
Who designed the iPad has maybe done it again.
It's like they've got the aspect ratio slightly wrong. It's a bit too slab-sided. If you reduce how slab-sided this car appears to be by 10%, it would look 20% less slab-sided. Do you know what I mean? It's just gone over a little bit too much, a bit too tall.
I just want to see it in the context of another car. Because the only thing is, I've seen a couple of friends who have taken pictures next to it, but they've all been quite close to it, apart from one who is an Australian journalist, Noelle Faulkner, a good friend of mine. Love her to bits, and go and search out her coverage on this because it'll be exemplary and brilliant. The only problem is Noelle is, I think, 4'11", 4'10". She's a very, very tiny lady. So if you put her next to a car in a space where there is just that car, you don't really know how big it is.
Yeah. She could be standing next to a monster truck.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
She's a very tiny lady, exemplary journalist. Yes, do please find her coverage. She's brilliant. But yeah, so I want to see it next to a 296, or I want to see it next to an X5, or I want to see it next to a Q3. I just want to get that sense of size and scale. You know, because people say, oh, it's a bit different from a Puro Sangue. Great, that's massive. And I've only ever seen them next to other Ferraris. So I sort of get it, but sort of don't. But I'm quietly confident that it'll grow on people, as it did me. It just took me a week to do it. I like the sort of implied simplicity of the shape, whereas actually it's not simple at all.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there. If you compare in like for like, you mentioned the Battista earlier on. What's his name? Luca Borgogno, who I met and spent time with, designed that car. I think did a far better job of making a car look like a Ferrari than Ferrari have on this occasion.
Yeah, but bear in mind the Battista is a Rimac Nevera underneath. Like that's what it is. So they were told, right, you have all your software, make it pretty. And we'll do the rest. And I know a couple of people have driven it, and they went, yeah, it's really good. But it sort of died a death. I don't know where Pininfarina's gone. Let me just do a quick Google. Hang on.
Automobili Pininfarina, the car manufacturing wing is called. And I'm biased because Luca, who designed the Battista, is a massive Lancia fan and had an amazing Lancia Monte Carlo that he renovated beautifully. Then took pictures of him and his partner and kids in 70s gear standing next to it. And
nice.
I thought, I like this guy. I like this guy a lot.
He can stay. Yeah, I mean, the website for it is still up.
Yeah.
But the last two option packs, Battista or Furiosa.
Yes.
Battista Amplified. With loads of power. Yeah, Top Gear reviewed it in 2001. Evo reviewed it in 2003.
I was
down for a drive and then just didn't.
That can't be right. 2001, the Battista.
Sorry, 2021.
Yeah,
2023.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm being an idiot. 2001 would be a little bit ahead of its time.
Yeah. And again, you mentioned the Roadster earlier on. Tesla Roadster and the Lotus Evagina. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Evia, darling, Evia.
Yes, Evagina.
Yes, of course.
And again, they're more dramatic looking cars. It lacks drama, Luce. And I think that will cost it. It might have longevity.
If you think of recent Ferrari GTs, like the proper GT stuff, so
The
FF and
the GT4R, or the Scaglietti,
things like that, the 599, they're very beautiful, but they're not dramatic.
More dramatic than Lucci.
But I think it's just because they've done two very different things at once. They've done basically a family car, and they've made it electric. And because it's so different, people have just gone, oh, God, I don't like it, which is completely understandable.
But
I just say give it a year. Well, let's revisit.
I saw something online where I think someone had compared the Ferrari Luce to, was it a Nissan EV that's available?
Oh, the Leaf,
Is it a Leaf? Is that the Leaf? No
the new
way.
Leaf. Or the the Aria, sorry, the Nissan Aria.
Was it the Aria in a similar colour and there is a lot more in common with that car than there was with any other Ferrari. And I think that is the issue here. But, you know, we wish them well. You know, they'll get there.
It'd be great Ferrari sales. Oh, yeah, your car looks like a Ferrari.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? Your car looks like a Nissan. Yeah.
Hey.
Emmanuel Stellantis. Has heard of Stellantis? Tell me more about the SCLA-1 modular platform.
Well, this is an entirely new platform which will work not only in the B segment, but also the C segment, ranging from small urban hatchbacks to SUVs, and we'll use this across all 14 brands that make up the Stellantis portfolio.
It's been reported that this platform will be the underpinning of around 120 different Stellantis models.
No, that's not correct. It will underpin 120 cars, not models. We don't expect sales to be greater than that. Man, competing with the Chinese is hard.
You're a joke on speed!
Let's raise the tone a little bit, because not everyone agrees about Luce, but Alex, you've been driving a car which I know you love, and yes, you know I love as well. I'm very fond of Alpine, the road cars. I've no emotional attachment to the F1 team. I miss Signatec in Le Mans, but the A110, the first model I drove, was great. And you've driven them all now, haven't you?
I've driven... Hang on, let me have a quick think. I have driven... the basic one, yep. I've driven the S,
yep.
I've driven the GT.
Yeah, you went to Le Mans in that one year, I think, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to Le Mans in the S, I think.
Ah.
And the basic one. I think I can't remember when I drove the GT S at a Pirelli tyre launch last year. But now I have driven the R. So I think we talked about it last time. I have an job. I'm the creative director at Drive Tribe now, which means I will occasionally be hosting videos, which is great because I love it.
And you're good at it.
And I'm all right at it.
You're very good at it.
And so I was sort of tasked with finding my first car, my first the film. And then there was going to be a handover from Richard Hammond, see what he thinks and do the do. And I was like, well, sod it. Let's do an A110R. I think that would be really good fun. So I rang Alpine and said, hi, I've got a new job. Would you mind awfully? So I've been trying to borrow it for years, but with limited success. And they went, yeah, when do you want it?
Yeah.
So it appeared. And I had it on a track. And then I drove it to Wales to do the handover with Richard. And it was all very lovely. And you know what? It's really good.
Yeah, they're all good.
Unsurprisingly.
They are all good. I mean, all the Alpines are good, I think.
The A110 itself, with the basic power, because it was 256 horsepower when it first came out, if memory serves. And that was decent.
Yeah.
Decent amount of grunt, but I was never like, oh, this is incredible. And it was a little bit noisy and a little bit not good for road trips. When they gave it a bit more power, it just gave it a bit more go. But the thing with the R is that they've got the bigger power, 300 horsepower, 251, I think. Hang on, let me check my cheat sheet. Yeah, 251 pound foot, which isn't a lot today, but it weighs 1,082 kilos.
There you go.
Which is also not a lot.
Yes.
So yeah, 0-60, sub 4, top speed 177-ish. I mean, I didn't get anywhere near that on the public highway officer. And the way they've done it is it's carbon everything. I think they've taken about 30, 40 kilos out of it. Carbon hood, carbon roof, carbon rear window thing. So when you're trying to overtake people on the M4, it's really dicey. Carbon wheels, carbon splitters, carbon wing, carbon seats, carbon, basically carbon. It's carbon. it's all carbon.
They should have called it the A110C then, shouldn't they? A110
yeah.
Carbon.
Carbon,
that would
merci.
Work, wouldn't it? Alpine seem to be selling these cars. They sit somewhere in the grand universe between Lotus and Porsche.
Yeah, Alpine's problem is that it isn't a Porsche.
Yeah.
And it isn't as sort of engineered... And this is going to sound weird, but it's not as engineered as a Lotus. And what I mean by that is that, you know, the initial car was like 45, 50 grand, which for 250 horsepower is a lot of money. And then for something with as much plastic as was in that car,
yeah,
it was one of my big complaints when I drove it, and I got into someone who owns one, who also owns a watch company.
Switchgear all McGann.
Yeah, and I said, look, it's a lot of plastic in it for 45, 50 grand. And he properly went off at me, which is why I don't own any of his watches, because the watches are quite nice, but he is a prick.
Wow. Yeah, well, fingers up to him.
Well, he just wasn't very nice about it. But I also find, as I imagine you have, Gareth, when you criticise a car, the people that come at you the most are the people who've already got one.
Yeah, of
course. You're wrong about this. So I always go, so how long have you had yours? And they go, oh, 3 years. Right, okay. So, if you like it, it doesn't matter what I say.
Indeed. It's a preference thing.
Because Porsches are like 15, 20 grand more expensive, and they're rarefied, and you've got the whole Porsche ethos around it. And Lotuses, we expect those to be a 20 grand, 30 grand car, even though they're not. They weren't even when this came out. Elises were knocking on 40.
Mm.
Exiges were 50, 60, I think, if memory serves. Lotuses were full of plastic, but the switchgear was kind of milled from bits of aluminium, and it was sort of very individual, whereas this was full of Renault bits.
Yeah, it was all McGann.
The key was the same as a Clio.
Yeah.
That weird control, like audio control thing the wheel. My mum's Clio had one of those. My Dacia Duster has one of those. Like, those are things that we had. It kind of just took away from the experience a little bit, which meant that the people who really got them bought them, and then anyone who got in one a bit unsure would then go out, go nuts in it, have the best time ever, and then go, wow, I really want one of these. Oh, that's a lot of money. I can't afford it. And it's a great shame that happened, because they're really good, but the sales figures I don't think ever matched up to the car's ability, because people would go, sod it, I'll get a Porsche or a used Porsche.
Yeah.
Which means they're going to hold their value well. I mean, the R is, depending on when you look at pricing, it's a 90 grand plus car. Or if you go for, there's the Ultime edition, which is hundreds of thousands of pounds. There's an edition that's six figures and not small six figures. But it's really good. It's so good. Just the steering is excellent. The way it picks itself up and just goes is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. And you can properly pitch it in. And I'm not a sideways person by any means, but you can pitch it in and go, I think if I push any further, I'm going to have an accident. And it goes, nope. Yeah. Off we go. And then it does that thing where, especially as I'm getting a little older, my face starts to get peeled away from my skull.
Grip and agility in reserve, beyond our abilities. I love that. Do you know what?
Yeah.
Something just occurred to me. This R Ultima is, what, the last A110, right?
Well, it's the last A110 of this generation. So this one is £35,000. It's got a bit more power, though.
Wow.
340 horsepower. I think I'd take a regular R to Litchfield and go, can you give it a bit more power?
Yeah.
Ian would go, yes, done. Yeah, so there's the R Ultime, which is God knows how much money. And, that much money, and limited this and limited that. And, like, only a rarefied few will ever get it. The thing about the R is that it's absolutely exceptional on track. But on the road, oh, my God, it's got sort of gently adjustable suspension. I drove it to Wales, to where we always go. And on a bumpy road, it was just agony. And you've got a six-point harness, so anytime you need to get out of it, you need to slide the seat back and then unclip yourself and get in and reclip it. And because it's a modern car, it has sensors on it, so you can't drive it around your car park without having done the thing up. Otherwise, it'll bong at you. Like, it's flawed for normal driving.
Yeah.
But it's really good. If you live next to a... I'd have one as a track hack.
And you would say the same about the Exige or the Elise. You know, they were really great cars for chucking around and at the expense of ultimate practicality. But I reckon there's one more Alpine to come. I don't know if they'll do it on the current A110 or if it'll be the next generation. But I don't know if you're aware that Gucci became title sponsors.
Can you imagine?
Of the Alpine F1 team. So there's bound to be a Gucci version of, not this A110.
Well, they might do a Gucci version of the A290 or the A390.
Yeah,
the two Lecky ones. Because that would be quite cool. Because the A290 is quite a fashion forward car.
Yeah, mate.
The A390, less so. But, I mean, an A110 Gucci would be quite funny.
Gucci.
The Gucci edition.
You see, I don't think there is a single designer brand that I would like to see on my car, and I'm including the Lacoste Panda.
Tell you what, actually, I was at the unveil of the Paul Smith Mini the other week.
Paul Smith, the suit people.
Yeah, because you know Paul Smith and Mini have
really
like there was a Paul Smith Mini in the 90s. It was a purple thing. It was very cool. He did the Mini Strip, which is a pared down version of this generation Mini. That was a concept as all, and he's done something else. Oh, he did the Recharge one, so classic Minis made electric. But there's now a Paul Smith edition new Mini. And it's done quite tastefully, if I do say so.
Yeah, well,
it's done really nicely. Yeah. There's a little signature stripe on the roof. The bumpers aren't black, they're dark blue. So it's a neat little visual trick. You can get, I think, white and black and something else, but then with like a green contrast roof, which is, again, nicely done.
Very Savile Row.
Yeah, as they go, it's very well done. It's not like the old Fiat 500 Gucci edition, which is just a bit shit. But you know, the Paul Smith Mini, I've got time for it. But I am a Paul Smith fan, so I am kind of leaning towards it anyway. It's like, oh, Minis, I like those. Oh, Paul Smith, I like him. I'll have one. So
I don't think I care about any designers enough to want their badge on my car. If you gave me a car that was branded Starfleet, perhaps I'd like that Starfleet edition. Or
the Mini Slade.
Exactly. Actually, it'd probably have to be a Jensen Interceptor or an FF because they're from the West Midlands. Jensen FF, the West Brom Bomb Slade edition. Yeah.
An Alpine Alarm 110.
Go climb a mountain. That's very appropriate. The alarm we still love climbing mountains. We did that was part of our thing. Great. Oh, Alex, well done, mate. Lovely. Hey, and thank you. Nice to talk to you, brother.
You too, darling. Sorry, everyone. I've been so absent from the podcast recently. It's just life has been doing a life. And there's quite a lot of life happening.
There's a lot of life going on everywhere, isn't there? And we'll cling on to it and we'll see you for the next one, we hope. In fact, will we see you for the next one? Is the next one going to be from Le Mans? You're not going to Le Mans, are you?
I'm not going to Les Mans, no. The thing is, I've done so many on the bounce. The only one I missed, I think I was there in 18, 19, not 20, but 21, 22, 23, 24. No, I didn't do 21, I think. Anyway,
I think 21 was held under COVID conditions, I think, wasn't it? Yeah.
So did 22, 23, because those are both with Alpine. 24, Ford, 25, I was with Aston. And yeah, I did a couple before then. So I've had a good run of going to Le Mans.
Yeah, man.
I think I can give it a miss this year.
It'll be there next year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the new museum that they've built, which I'm going to go and have a look
at. I saw.
Yeah,
very cool. It's hopefully it'll be open 24 hours a day.
Hey! Ladies and gentlemen, that was Alex Goy.
Bye.
I was Gareth, and my gags aren't as good as yours. See ya!
Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share, and subscribe.
Gareth Jones on Speed!